we are loved to be joined, or we love to team up with. How's that sound? Better? With our friend from the NFL Network, a longtime Browns fan and friend of this show since day one. He is Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, and he's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Andrew, how are you today? Happy holidays.
I'm doing okay. You are loved to be joined as well, though.
Yes, thank you. Well, you know,
it works both ways.
You know, as long as you correct yourself right away after you've made the mistake, right, then it's okay.
Well, no, I don't think it was a mistake. You're missing my point. You are loved.
Yes.
To be joined. I mean, it. You could make it work.
Sounds good. I could use you for more arguments. Are you on? Are you going to be like my phone a friend for arguments then?
I am here for you.
You're a good man. All right, let's talk about this relevant game for the Browns. A playoff type atmosphere for the Browns going into Baltimore on Sunday. Fans here are just, you know, excited about the future. You sell out last week. This is as good as it's felt in quite some time, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was thinking about 2007 of all years yesterday, because obviously everyone knows 2007, a 10-win season. You could argue the best team. This is the best team since 2007. That team also had to come down to week 17. Granted, they didn't get in, but it did come down to a Titans-Colts game on Sunday night, week 17, if you guys remember. It's Titans-Colts again this week. Granted, the Browns don't have a path in. I don't know. Memories of Derek Anderson and Joe Jerovicius dancing in your head. It's good to have a meaningful game. Granted, meaningful is relative, but it's meaningful to a franchise and to a fan base, and that's important because you haven't had that feeling in a long, long time.
And a lot of it, of course, Andrew, is because of Baker Mayfield. And what do you think, from the national perspective, the taunt, I guess is the word I'd use, to Hugh Jackson? My thought is enough is enough. Let's move on and forget that. What are you thinking, or what are the national people thinking?
I think I'm with you, Les. Enough is enough. Move on. You don't want to have the guy change, though. It's part of who he is. It's part of why the team is looking potentially at 8-7-1. It's part of the reason why his teammates love playing for him and the fans love rooting for him. I mean, my aunt, who's I think 70, said to me on the phone on Christmas Day, how excited she was. She's going out to buy a Browns t-shirt, a Baker Mayfield t-shirt, something like that, and she hasn't done that in years. So the feeling is real. You don't want to take that feeling away. I think what the football people think and what the talking heads who need to scream on TV to try to get you to react to the television and put up topic bars like, should somebody hit Baker Mayfield and teach him a lesson? That stuff is nonsense. I don't pay attention to the screaming talking head shows because I think they're nonsense. They're meant to get a reaction out of you. So what the I need a reaction, talk back to me pundits say, I couldn't care less. If you look at the football is amazing. Like I said, I think enough is enough, but I don't necessarily want the guy to change because it's a huge portion, a huge reason that they've had this success.
Pretty much how I feel.
Andrew, I have no idea what you're talking about. What do you mean?
I mean, what one more thing, Les. I would say, like, It's kind of cute with Calhoun as he goes back and forth, and let it go with Colin. I mean, Colin knows exactly what he's doing. Colin's playing a game as well, right?
Well, I mean, thought
he
Baker
knows what he's doing.
Andrew, don't you think Baker did a good job of calling him out the other day on basically?
I think it was kind of fun. You know, it didn't sound mean-spirited.
No.
It sounded like Baker realized, yes, this is part of the game. I see you. Don't worry about it. But if you stop playing the game, it's no fun for the other guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, over the last couple of days, people have been talking about the fact that Paul DePodesta has some sort of power here and what happened. I don't know why people are so shocked by that. He's still with the team. He's been with the organization. It's not like the Browns were trying to hide that. The only guy that got fired was Sashi. And so that if DePodesta has some sort of influence on the next head coach, I don't think it should be a surprise.
Is this all from the Charles Robinson article?
Yes.
Okay. So I read that too. I mean, I don't know why people are surprised. He still cashes a significant paycheck and has an office, right?
He is listed as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He is listed as 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth most important person in the organization.
Listen, he's going to have some say. In the end, and people always, and I know we have this conversation a lot when I come on with you guys, people always fret about, well, who has final say? Guys, here's who has final say. The stinking owner. Okay, and I don't mean that Jimmy Haslam is stinking. I'm using this, obviously, to refer to anyone who runs a franchise. They write the check, okay? They sign the check. They pay the bills. In the end, it's their business. So, yes, I'm sure Paul DePodesta has some say, as does John Dorsey, as does whomever you want to put on that organizational flowchart. But in the end, Jeffrey Lurie makes the decision in Philadelphia, right? He's the one who fired Chip Kelly. In the end, Robert Kraft makes the decision in Foxborough. In the end, Stephen Ross decides if Adam Gase is back. Got it? In the end, in Denver, it's John Elway and Joe Ellis, with Mr. Bolin really not making many decisions now and not being hands-on as he battles Alzheimer's, right?
Right.
It's the owner who makes the decision, period. So
even if the owner has made,
here.
Even if the owner has made what most football people would say several, and when I say several, I could mean five or six of the decisions that really were amongst the worst decisions you could possibly make. He's a smart man. Someone would think that he'd give it up at least and let the football people make that decision.
Sure, Les. When I say makes the decision, I mean in the end says do it. Okay,
that's
he's
fair.
The one who hired John Dorsey. Now, will John Dorsey bring him a number of candidates? Will he listen to John Dorsey's strong pitch for whomever it is that Dorsey wants? Absolutely. But in the end, you know, he can always say, no, don't hire that guy. That's the point I'm making. So
right.
will he listen to the Dorsey, DePodesta, whomever pitch? Of course. In the end, he's the one that has to say, send the plane.
Listen, I think we sit here with George Kokinas' fear. And when I say that, I say that people think that if they get the coaching hire wrong this time, that it's on John Dorsey, that John Dorsey has one chance to get this right, that John Dorsey has this piece of paper, his magical piece of paper in his pocket that has been in there since he was born, and that magical piece of paper will never change. I laugh when I hear this, but I don't think he only has one chance to get this right, especially if it's groupthink that decides who the next head coach should be. If John Dorsey can continue to deliver the players that he did in his first draft, why would you ever walk away from him? He might walk away from you first.
You're not going to walk away from Dorsey.
No.
Second of all, here's what I'm feeling right now, because I feel it too, right? There are all of the Browns fans right now think that they're going to wake up and everyone's going to tell them it was all a dream. They live in fear, because I'm speaking for myself, live in fear of something going wrong and messing this run up. Right, like potentially something going wrong Sunday and heading into the off season. I've had this thought. I had a 5.5 hour plane flight yesterday. What could go wrong Sunday? Stop thinking about what can go wrong. Think about what can and will continue to go right. And if they win, does Greg Williams get this job? I'll be honest. I told you 2 months ago, no way in HE double hockey sticks. Now it could very well happen because, and this isn't inside information, I don't know how you ever tell a guy who won 6 out of 8 and got them over 500 that he shouldn't have the job. You know, my fear is can his style of coaching last through an off season? Can this momentum carry into September? I don't know that it can, but the people in the building have a better feel for it. And here's another thing. I don't know that John Dorsey has one name and one name only that he's infatuated with that has to replace Greg Williams. You know, so many coaching hires come from great interviews. I'll use Mike Tomlin as an example, and everyone does. He wasn't going to get that job, and then he blew him away in the interview. And there might be an heretofore unimagined candidate who blows them away in the interview.
That could very well be.
No one knew who Freddie Kitchens was.
Yeah, it
could. I mean, Greg Williams sat up there on the podium. No, Freddie Kitchens wasn't my choice. And we all went, okay, this is going to crash and burn, yeah. Except it didn't.
You know, what's interesting is we've been taking calls, well, forever, but the last week or two. And unofficially, it's like 80% of the people want Greg Williams to continue on. Now, that shouldn't matter in the decision-making process, but that's what it is here on the street.
Well, Wes, they're playing really well. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Like, think about this. We haven't even talked about how to stop Lamar Jackson yet, right?
Right. That was my next question.
Everyone is so excited for next year. I mean, has there ever – it is – you're heading into week 17. They have this great opportunity to – keep the Ravens, of all people, out of the playoffs, right?
Yeah, the Art Modell's team.
Yes, and we're sitting here talking about, can they win week one next year, and who's going to be the coach week one next year? We're not talking about the draft. No one think about this. We're heading into week 17, and no one cares that winning or losing on Sunday could change their draft pick by 4 to 5 spots. Nobody cares. I mean, that's unheard of. Why am I yelling? Is another thing.
Because you're trying to move the needle because you're on a talk show right now. That's why. You've become the person that you didn't want to be in the beginning of this
Colin Cowherd to hear about
that. No,
that's right.
It's exciting. I like Colin, but it's an level. It's excitement of, you know, anything. I mean, how about my family? My brother married a girl from Pittsburgh, and we love her to death. It's been 19 wonderful years.
There's a mixed
marriage.
But
she's a Steeler fan. My brother, on Sunday night last week, when the math became evident what the Steelers needed, left a Browns T-shirt on her pillow and said, "In case you need this next week."
Oh, we took all day yesterday, and by the way, the phone line is still open for groveling Steeler fans. If they want to come in and beg the Browns to win this week, we are taking their phone calls. They have a free line to call in on.
What they would give up for a Browns win.
Like Antonio Brown. Have you seen his jerseys?
I saw that. I did. My colleague Aditi Kinkabwala, who you guys know, she pointed out on the air yesterday that it was the Rooneys and the Wilsons in Buffalo who voted against the move.
Absolutely. Yep.
That was a good part of our show yesterday about how, you know, do you hate Baltimore or do you hate Pittsburgh more? And I always go back to that point that she brought up, that when it was coming to an end for part one of the Browns, that there were a couple teams that stepped up. Now, let's face it, those two teams profited a little bit by the fact that the Browns weren't here because someone, if you were looking for pro football, you know, it was either Buffalo or Pittsburgh. I mean the Steeler gamers were even on the radio here. Yeah. It was lean years.
It was only a couple of years. And you know, I'm on the radio here in L.A. on Thursday mornings doing some stuff with the Rams, and I was just asked this morning, do people still think about 95 and 99 in context of this week's game? And I said, abso-freaking-lutely, they do. And honestly, this is the – you guys tell me, you're there every week. This seems like the first time in, I don't know.
First time. You're right that it's relevant, that this
first
is a
time
meaningful
in a
game.
Long time. But look, the first couple of years, 99, 2000, 2001, like – they come back and let's go beat the Ravens. But through time, not that you let it go, but it doesn't mean that much anymore, almost to the point where you forget it's the Ravens when you're playing them. But now this feels different, and it kind of feels good to remember because it means the game means something. 2002,
bingo.
when they play the Steelers in the postseason, obviously, they blew it in the second half, but if they had won that game, that would have been like the kind of flag-planting statement. Oh, well, it didn't happen.
And that's why we have Baker Mayfield now, to plant that flag. Can't wait to see it this weekend. I hope so.
Exactly.
Just like you did to Ohio State. Hey, happy holidays to you. Happy New Year to you. We won't talk to you until after that. So,
Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes.
To Phelps as well, who's mailing it in, evidently.
Of course he is.
And hope everyone has a wonderful holiday. Enjoy your Sunday. If you don't go to the game, I recommend the Red Zone channel. We will have 15 games for you.
Wow.
Andrew, thank you. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
Sounds good, guys.
All right, peace. All right, well, and don't forget to watch Andrew on NFL Network. You can see his stuff on NFL.com as well. Great guy, and obviously loves the Browns and understands our history as good as anybody or as well as anybody nationally. And he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.